Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First for today. It is January the 12th, 2023. I'm Ryan Balogie. Good to have you with us, whether you're watching or listening. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have two stories, as the name of the show implies, for you today. Kind of putting a couple of topics together, a little bit live-related, but more just kind of funny than anything, and we'll talk about that. And then we've got Kapalua in the books, but we've got YLA as the second part of the Aloha Swing. That starts today a little bit later on in the Hawaiian time zone, 5 hours behind the Eastern time zone. When we're recording this, it's, you know, 4:50 in the morning their time, so we still got a little bit of time till the first full field event on the PGA Tour of 2023 gets started. We'll touch on that a little bit, and also the new event on the DP World Tour, kind of surround the action for the week for you. So, let's start with the funny. Happy birthday, Ian Poulter. Sorry it's belated. If you were on Twitter, hopefully you got to enjoy this. If you're not, let me break it down for you. So, the folks at the DP World Tour and the European Ryder Cup side of things, they tweeted out a video of, I believe it was Francesco Molinari, and it was him showing deft touch, short game touch. It was like a nice chip shot during the Ryder Cup. Very benign video, and it kind of feeds into this week's Hero Cup, because he is one of the playing captains of the two teams they created. We'll get into that later. But he's competing in it, so they're kind of throwing reference to that and throwing a little pub behind it, because the Hero Cup is supposed to be kind of a farm system event that will help these guys on Ryder Cup Europe pick some new players, because they're going to need some with all the live defections. So they're trying to get ready for Rome. And in response to the tweet, Ian Poulter just gets upset about not basically being asked happy birthday, or being said happy birthday by the Ryder Cup account, which I really did not understand, but it was an absolutely absurd tweet. And it kind of starts with what's really an incredible touch, because the tweet referencing Francesco Molinari's chip shot or whatever was incredible touch. And then he says, oh, he's really mad about all the, you know, the Ryder Cup account not giving a happy birthday wish to the players that have made the Ryder Cup and scored so many points over the years and blah, blah, blah. And he references Sergio Garcia because they're born around the same time. But what he was really talking about was his own darn birthday, which was that day that he sent the tweet. And, of course, everyone roasted Poulter for it, as they absolutely should have. And then, in response to that, Liv, which obviously Poulter is contracted to play, and had not sent out a happy birthday tweet about Ian Poulter, 16 minutes later, gets on the phone and is like, oh shoot, we need to send out a birthday tweet for Ian Poulter, and they send out the birthday tweet for Ian Poulter. What is going on? What, first of all, what 40-year-old person, I'm turning 40 in April, by the way, what 40-year-old person cares about their birthday anymore? There are very few birthdays that matter in your life after like 10. And you can list them in chronological order, 16, 21, 25, maybe 30, maybe 40. And then like 65, technically speaking, but people retire at different ages in this country. And then death. Like, those are the most important days in terms of like your birth or death. That's it. And in terms of importance, I would say you can't always get your license at 16 anymore. So 21 is number one, because, oh, and 18 is important. 21, 18, 16, 25 might be more important than 18, because you can rent a car, and if you like to travel, that kind of thing matters to you. Then 40, then 30, then, and probably 65 could be in front of them, but again, not everyone retires at the same age. So if you're trying to rank your birthdays, being somewhere just above 40 years old or closer to 50, I guess, it doesn't matter. Like, no one needs to tell you happy birthday. In fact, at this point in my life, I prefer people not tell me happy birthday, because all the people that are going to tell me happy birthday are on Facebook, and they're all people I probably haven't talked to in a while, because the people who know me don't text me happy birthday, or even tell me happy birthday. They just kind of see me and go, hey, it's your birthday, and then we move on with life. So what grown person cares about their birthday? And so instead of being an adult and just kind of be like, all right, yeah, no one wished me happy birthday today, excellent news, because no one acknowledges I'm getting older, Poulter goes nuts. He gets upset about it. And then he kind of doubles down on it all. And everyone, of course, makes fun of him for it. And I'm sure some people wished him happy belated birthday. And hey, happy birthday. If you want that wish, I have no problem giving it to you. But then he gets upset at Greg Allen, who is a guy in Northern Ireland who does different commentary and sports writing. He's a good dude. We follow each other on Twitter. And Poulter got upset with him because he made a joke claiming that Greg was fed a line from Keith Pelley, as though like he was told to say that by the European Tour Group CEO or something like that. All of this has to do with not getting birthday wishes. Not in a tweet. Not even from people who know you personally all that well. It'd be one thing if, like, my mom forgot to tell me happy birthday. And I have a good relationship with her. So, you know, if she didn't tell me happy birthday, I'd be kind of upset. But random Twitter account for a competition that I have turned my back on, and knowingly turned my back on, because he's not going to get involved, probably. And then expects a happy birthday shout out. It's like he intentionally tried to turn it into a divisive issue. It doesn't make sense to me. And it was something worth making fun of for 5 or 6 minutes on this show, because just people go crazy sometimes. And I think we have to remember that in everything that happens in life, but particularly as it relates to all this live PGA Tour stuff, all the infighting. Everybody involved is a human, right? And everyone gets emotional. There are very few robotic people in the world. Everyone gets emotional. And they often say things one way or another based on what they feel at that moment. So every time Rory McIlroy or John Rahm or whoever on the PGA Tour side of things says something that even opens the door to some kind of reconciliation with LIV players, whether it's now, down the line, whatever, Ryder Cup related, not related, everyone's like, oh no, he's changed his mind. The reality is these players have not changed their minds about anything yet. And I think it's important to underscore that when these folks say these things, they're human beings. They've probably had conversations with people they still like that are at LIV, or vice versa, with LIV folks who still have relationships, good relationships, with players who are on the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour. And you don't really hear the LIV guys say, well, maybe we should, you know, back down and have open qualifiers or whatever gripes you would have if you were a PGA Tour, DP World Tour player about LIV's being a closed shop for a full 14 events. They don't do that. But they could, because they're human beings. And so Poulter's whole tweet issue with his birthday is just a reminder that we see things through very different prisms. And sometimes that means ridiculous things come out of our mouths or through our fingers on Twitter or social media. And it's worth making fun of, but it's also worth some forgiveness. So I'm not trying to say Ian Poulter's a horrible human being or anything like that. He just kind of had a moment, was like, hey, I'm mad about this, and then got into it. And we do that all the time. And hopefully that's kind of the last of it. And then we can just move on with things, acknowledge something funny happened, and move on with it. That all said, there is some live news out there. James Corrigan of Telegraph reported, I believe it was last night, but I don't remember specifically the timing, that Mito Pereira is going to join LIV. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. It sounded like he was very much considering joining LIV at the tail end of last PGA Tour season, but he knew he had qualified for the President's Cup team, wanted to play in that one time before going to LIV, wound up probably having to make some kind of commitment to the PGA Tour, saying, hey, if I'm going to play in the President's Cup, I'm not going to jump to LIV until 2023. He did his end of the bargain. Going to go to LIV. He's the world number 44 right now. Largely influenced by a great finish at the PGA Championship, although an unfortunate one could have won the tournament, but horrible 72nd hole opened the door for Justin Thomas to win. He's a good young player. He's very good friends with Joaquin Niemann. So kind of makes sense with Niemann over there that he might go over there with one of his best buddies. I think everyone kind of knew probably on the PGA Tour side of things this was likely to happen. I don't know how this rates in the long haul. We have kind of noticed that LIV has gone out of their way to sign international players. I don't know if that's because that's the available market or that's an intentional design or a little bit of both, probably more like that. Trying to find wedges, so to speak. Project Wedge is what the Saudi Public Investment Fund called LIV. Project Wedge, trying to find wedges in where you could build new audiences potentially for golf and maybe connect with people in the way the PGA Tour doesn't connect in those communities or continents or geographic areas with golf. So you know, bringing in a couple of South American guys that are very, very good young players, it makes sense from that strategy perspective. And frankly, it makes sense for those guys as well, because they don't, I mean, they've never seen money like that, probably. Hardly anyone has. So for them, that's a great opportunity to cash in. And it, as we talked about maybe another show, I think another, the first episode of the year for this program, if you think Liv's going away, and that's always a possibility, we don't know where things are, but if you think Liv's going away in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years, and you sign a 1, 2, 3, 4 year deal, maybe you figure if Liv goes away, you could benefit twice. You get the money, and you get a relaxed schedule, and then you can come back to the PGA Tour in due course. He's got his Masters invite, so he's going to play in that. I mean, he's kind of got what he needs, I guess. So maybe that was the whole calculus. But that's out there from James Corrigan. I don't think Corrigan's been wrong yet on anything, Liv. He doesn't speak unless he's got it down pat. So we're going to take him at his word that that is happening. So happy birthday, Ian Poulter. We'll see you soon, Mito Pereira. Second story is kind of the action for the week. So we talked about the second event of the Aloha Swing. The first full field event of 2023 on the PGA Tour is the Sony Open in Hawaii. It is one of my favorite events. I really enjoy watching it for a variety of reasons. One, it's primetime golf. Two, it's Hawaii. Three, it's Wailea Country Club. Wailea Country Club is the only Seth Rayner design used on the PGA Tour. Seth Rayner, if you don't know, Golden Age architect, did a very limited number of golf courses in his career before he died. He loved to use this concept of template holes, so similar versions to holes he found overseas in the UK in the course of his kind of study about golf architecture, brought them over here, found places to put them, put different spins on them, but he used a lot of those different types of holes and then put in some of his own designs, obviously, that he liked to use over and over again. But it turned out to be great, fun, classic golf courses. But there are many of them, and there certainly aren't many of them that are open to having a PGA Tour event every year. So Honolulu's Wailea Country Club is a great place. It's under 7,100 yards or under 7,200 yards. It's not a long golf course from a modern standard, but the par fours are particularly stout. The par threes really aren't that long, and the par fives, there's two on the course. They're very gettable, one to end each side. But the par fours are really what make the distance of this golf course. If you had really any substantial number of par fours under 400 yards, this would be a golf course that would play under 7,000 yards. But because you have a bunch of par fours in that 440 to 490 range, you've got a golf course that at least asks some really interesting questions. They've changed the setup a little bit this year. They've added 1 inch of rough to the length, 1 inch to the length of the rough around the golf course. That's going to make driving more important. That's going to make second shots more important, because unlike a lot of golf courses on the PGA Tour, Wailea offers a lot of really awkward pitch shots, chip shots, and bunker shots that means that a player who does well at this tournament either has to hit a lot of greens and make a lot of putts, or has to manage to get up and down a lot from a lot of awkward situations. So rough just makes that a little bit more difficult in a lot of ways, particularly at this golf course. There are plenty of golf courses where you could actually shave down the rough and make it maybe even a little bit more difficult for the average player, but for a professional, putting a ball deep down in rough and trying to find a way to spin it and get close to the hole is about as substantial of a challenge as you can make it. So there's going to be a little bit more premium this year on driving the golf ball well, hitting good second shots, and then obviously it turns into a track meet. Putting-wise, it's par 70 golf course. These guys are going to go low. Probably 20 to 25 under is going to win this tournament, if not a little bit better than that. It's typically tight. It's really what you want. And in terms of the profiles of winners that we get at this tournament, they're typically experienced. They're typically closer to their 30s, not in their 20s. They typically play the week before. 17 of the last 24 winners at YLA played the week before at Kapalua in the Tournament of Champions. So knocking a little bit of rust off the week before, no matter where you finish, you didn't even have to finish well. You just had to play the week before. It tends to portend the winner. And then in 5 of the last 8 years, the winner at Sony won at some point in the fall series. Obviously, that trend is going to change because moving forward after this year, a lot of top players are going to play basically nothing in the fall, if next to nothing. Somewhere in there between 0, 1, and 2 events, but probably a lot will play 0 because the fall is going to turn into some way for PGA Tour players who don't get in the FedEx Cup playoffs to keep their card. That's going to be a lot of guys because now the top 70 get in the playoffs instead of the top 125. So there's going to be a kind of a lot of crowded fields for people who want to keep cards. A lot of top players are probably just going to say, hey, I'll play once or twice, but you know, depending on what the makeup of the fall looks like, you can count me out for most of it. So in the future, that trend will probably dissipate, if not go away entirely. Still, you got a really interesting field. Tom Kim headlines it. You've got Sungjae Im. You've got Jordan Spieth. Billy Horschel's in there. Corey Connors is in there. You got some good young guns. Ben Griffin, who had a close call in Bermuda. Taylor Montgomery, who has been a top 15 machine on the PGA Tour since getting his card from the Korn Ferry Tour. Lots and lots of good young players are competing in this. And then you've got a bunch of kind of guys that you probably know their name. Maybe they haven't won before, or maybe they haven't won as much as you think. Denny McCarthy, Russell Henley, Tom Hoagie, who played really well last week. So you got an interesting field and a golf course that rewards ball striking, not necessarily length. In fact, it kind of swats down guys who are longer because it creates some really tight corridors and takes away the advantage of their length. So that starts all tonight. I believe it starts at 7 o'clock Eastern on Golf Channel if you want to watch it. If you would like to stream it, it's on ESPN Plus for PGA Tour Live. I believe starts at noon, although that's way too early for the actual golf to start. So I don't know why that would be the case. Again, the five-hour time difference between the East Coast and Hawaii. I don't know why it said at 12, but it starts at 12 apparently. That's probably a pregame show, so wait a couple hours and then hop in there maybe at like 3 o'clock. You'll probably get a whole lot of action till 10 o'clock. Now, the other event for this week is the Hero Cup. And the Hero Cup is a new team event. We have not heard a lot about it publicly because really it's just a new thing and it is a little bit awkward. But the idea behind the Hero Cup was concocted last year because the team competition that really matters for the DP World Tour financially and in terms of competition is the Ryder Cup. And that's at the end of the fall this year. But because so many players have either gone to live or they were just old anyway. I mean, if you looked at what happened at the 2021 Ryder Cup at Whistling, and you looked at the blowout, and you looked at how the European Tour players or the European players on that team reacted to the whole thing, there was a lot of emotion, particularly from the older guys, from Westwood, from Poulter, from Garcia. There was that emotion because they knew that this was probably the end of their run as the headliners of the European Ryder Cup team. And that was before LIV became a reality. So they knew their time was probably up. And now that they have gone to LIV, they're trying to almost kind of extend their career in the Ryder Cup by making the argument that they would have played again and would have qualified had they been eligible. And as far as we know, they're not eligible and no changes happened there for this cycle. But the reality is the Europeans need a new generation and they need to start building that up. And you kind of have this middle group of players that are led by Hovland and McIlroy and Rahm, but you need another generation, another group to kind of bolt onto those guys in their 20s and build up the next dozen that you expect for the Ryder Cup on the European side. So that's where the Hero Cup comes from. They have two 10-player teams, each captain, Tommy Fleetwood for the Great Britain and Ireland team, and Francesco Molinari for the Continental Europe team. They're playing, and then they're going to have players on their team that are representative of each of those groups. A lot of young players, some mainstays. You know, a bunch of top 50 players are in this. Alex Norén-Shayne, Lowry Tyrrell-Hatton, a bunch of others. Sepp Straka is playing. Some commitment to the process of playing in the DP World Tour events because you need to rack those up to keep membership or get membership so you can qualify in the first place. And that is important too. So you not, check one off the list in a pretty comfortable format that somewhat resembles what the Ryder Cup is. So you're playing four balls, you're playing foursomes, you're playing singles matches over the course of 3 days. The layout isn't exactly the same. So over the Ryder Cup format, you have eight matches and 12 matches. Right, so you get to your 28 number. In this, we don't have that. So we're going to have 1 day of four ball only, or four sums. And then you have two sessions in a row of four ball. And I think that's in large part because the Europeans have struggled with that recently. and then you have a singles day. And they'll rack up the points, and whoever wins, wins. And that's lovely. I like it. It's in Abu Dhabi, which is kind of weird. That doesn't make sense. Like, hey, it's a Ryder Cup, pre-Ryder Cup thing in Abu Dhabi. That kind of loses me a little bit there. But because they're going to have the Abu Dhabi Championship there next week, it just kind of makes sense for them from a logistical standpoint to say, hey, if you want to come and compete in this, we'd love it if you stuck around in the UAE and played the following week in our effectively year opening event. So I get why they did it, but, you know, that's kind of a bit of a bummer. But anyway, interesting match play stuff. Well worth your time. Something to watch. We've got Coffee Golf back. That's great. And then starting on Sunday, the Korn Ferry Tour kicks off their two-week stretch in the Bahamas. I think this is the Great Exuma Classic. And that is starting on Sunday. That runs through Wednesday. And then they've got another event on another island in the Bahamas. Forget which one that is. Abaco, perhaps. And then that one runs similarly. I think it's Saturday through Tuesday or Sunday through Wednesday again. One or the other. But Korn Ferry Tour getting started. And then we get into the LPGA season starting the following week. The following weekend at Lake Nona in Orlando for the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. Excited to get that back in action. And also, with that, we'll have the Champions Tour back. They're going to be in Hawaii after the PGA Tour leaves. There'll be a Huala line. So, lots to come, but we got two events this week. Very excited about those. And all that action gets underway today in Wailea, and tomorrow in Abu Dhabi. That's going to do it for us today on 2 Off the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. We appreciate it. If you listen to us through a podcast service where you can rate us, appreciate 5 stars. If you enjoy the show and it helps us reach more people, we know how the algorithms work sometimes, maybe. And you can also listen to us, and this is very exciting news. I think we haven't talked about this yet on the show. If we did, I'm sorry. But we are live on iHeartRadio. 18 months from conception to reality, we are here. And on live on iHeartRadio, 24/7, 365. Very, very excited about that. You can also listen on their website, in their mobile apps, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, smart speakers, and our website, golfnewsnet.com. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for your time and enjoying the program. We'll talk to you tomorrow on 2 Off the First.